last night, and y'all saw Beyonce,
Beachella.
My bad. So welcome to our first ever To and Fro Live podcast. And this episode, we're going to be celebrating the 2-year anniversary of the Astounding Lemonade.
Yes. And special shout out to the University of Texas at Austin School of Journalism, the Tiny Texas Podcast Festival, and Dallas Morning News Endowment for Journalism Innovation for allowing us to ruin this lovely event that they're having this Sunday.
Just to start, we'll start by introducing ourselves. You kind of gave us a brief introduction there. But yeah, I work here at KUT as an assistant producer and as a host. And then on the side, I do this live podcast, this podcast as well.
Yes, and I'm Jackie. I don't work in radio, but I am a co-host to this podcast. Me and Dalia started off, we actually hosted another show called In the Public Interest at Texas State University, and that's how we met. And we're here, and we're happy to have you guys all here, be here with us.
Yeah, thank y'all. And so we're going to give you a layout of the show. Today, we're going to start by kind of talking about Beachella, and then we're going to play a little game of Who Bit Beyonce. And then we're going to be speaking with the amazing Alexis McGee about the linguistics used in Lemonade. And then also at the end, we're going to have a lip sync battle for our lives against Jackie, whoever is brave enough to challenge her. So we'll see.
Yes, but before we do that, I need you to run that song back, and y'all need to get hyped when y'all hear that. Okay, so run it back one more time. Thank you.
Let's talk about Beachella. Okay.
Yeah. We can't start this podcast without talking about Beyonce first, because by a show of hands,
who stayed up to 3 a.m. Watching Beyonce?
Me too.
I just want to start by saying that no one in that audience deserved that performance.
No, because they were too quiet for me.
They were too quiet.
I
was doing more dancing in front of my
TV. When I went to On the Run last year, I was yelling so hard that I felt like I was about to pass out. Like, I had to stop myself, because I was like, okay, I don't want to miss the show, first of all. But I was like, girl, calm down, because if Beyonce's in front of me, giving me all of this, I have to give her my all in return.
Exactly. Like, what was your favorite moment of Beachella?
I don't think I have a favorite moment, because, first of all, I haven't digested everything that she gave us. We were there for 3 hours. Yeah. She really slapped us in the face with this
because
we went into a blind. We didn't know if we were getting new music, but we're dancing to the same music that she gave us.
I think it was
so many moments.
So for those who didn't see it, Beyonce paid homage to HBCUs, to frat and sorority life of Black campuses, and then also, what else did she pay homage to?
Like, Destiny's Child.
Destiny's Child came out on stage, y'all, as well. And I just want to say that Beyonce, she was basically like, I'm sick of y'all asking for new music. I've been telling you girls that you can bop to what I have now. You're welcome.
And you're going to, because... Exactly. At the end of the day, Formation, we bought our tickets, and we didn't even have an album yet. It was just on faith. I'm always going to count on Beyonce, because she always delivers every single last time.
Every single time. So kind of moving on from that, we're going to talk about someone who bit the queen in the face.
How dare you?
So if you haven't heard, Tiffany Haddish, who runs her mouth more than a water faucet, basically told everybody everything during a GQ interview about how somebody bit Beyonce in the face. We knew that it was an actress. We knew that she was high off of something. We just didn't know exactly who it was. And ultimately, who did it come out? Well, who are we saying that it is?
Well, Tiffany said that whoever it was, Beyonce ran up and was like, this girl just bit me in the face.
Basically.
Ran up to Jay-Z, like, first of all, how dare she? Mm-hmm. But there's been some speculation that it was Love and Basketball, Sanaa Lathan, but that she claims that she didn't do it.
Yeah.
But I mean, who would admit that they bit Beyonce?
Yeah, I was about to say.
That's ruining your own career.
Exactly.
But, I mean, they also said maybe Taraji, Lena Dunham, or Gwyneth Paltrow, or even Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah.
But for our own fun, we're going to add in, we added in some stars that we mm-hmm. think could have done it yeah. or whatever.
And so, yeah. And so what we're going to do is we're going to have three brave volunteers come up here. And we're going to give you a celebrity card and you're going to have to argue why your celebrity did not bite Beyonce. At the end of the game, the audience will vote on who they think bit Beyonce. So whoever is ready, any volunteers to come up really quick, I'm sure you'll get extra credit. Oh, come on, come on.
We got one,
two, three.
Okay.
Yay.
Okay.
Hello, hello. Can y'all hear me? Okay,
yes.
Cool. All right, so you each will have a minute to
argue. I'll time it.
Yeah, you'll time it. You'll have a minute to basically argue why your person did not bite Beyonce. And then the audience at large will decide who it was. All right, you ready? Who wants to go first? You ready?
All right, girl.
All right, let me know when it starts.
You ready? All right, go.
Okay, so my celebrity is Taylor Swift. I read something about how this biting thing happened at a party or something. First of all, I doubt that she was even there because Taylor Swift is not worthy of being anywhere near Beyonce. So
I agree. I agree.
It. Yeah.
That's it. She won.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Even if she was there, Taylor Swift is also real fake. And so she loves like being the nice good girl or whatever, that like that fake image. So she would not do anything to jeopardize that, right?
Good point.
Okay.
So yeah, I mean I think that's all I needed to say.
All right. All right. Good
Thank
job.
Thank you. Give her a hand.
You did.
So my celebrity is Wendy Williams. Mm. So I think my main argument is that, if in case you haven't heard, Wendy Williams has had a little bit of a fainting problem, I hear, lately. And so I don't know if she would have, you know, had the courage to go up there and bite Beyonce in the face and remain conscious throughout all of this. Like, that just sounds a little too overwhelming. So, you know, and also Wendy gets into enough mess as it is,
without
going to the extreme of biting Beyonce in the face. So I think Wendy knows her limits, and I don't think Wendy would go there.
All right. All right. We like that one. All right. All right. So who do you have?
I am defending the Saint Jennifer Lawrence, who would never harm a fly except with a bow and arrow. That is my defense, actually. I believe that had Jennifer Lawrence had beef with Beyonce, she would have shot a bow and arrow at her and not had to get close enough to bite her.
Right.
Jennifer
Valid
Lawrence
argument.
Is currently pursuing 80 other movie options, so she does not have time to bite Beyonce.
Yeah, fat chick.
And
fat chick.
After the movie Mother, I do not believe that Jennifer Lawrence has teeth anymore that are real enough to bite Beyonce. That is my defense.
All right. Good job.
All right. Thank you.
All right. So you guys will now decide who bit Beyonce.
Who bit Beyonce?
There you go. All right. So a round of applause for, who are you again? Taylor. No, you're Taylor Swift. Sorry. All right. So Taylor Swift. Wendy Williams. Jennifer Lawrence.
And the winner is Jennifer Lawrence.
And Jennifer Lawrence bit Beyonce. Well, thank you for playing in the round of
guys.
Who Bit Beyonce. Well, thank y'all. A round of applause
One
for them, y'all.
One more round of applause.
All right. So let me move on because this is a smooth transition right here. There we go. All right. So today we're going to be speaking about the linguistics used in Beyonce's Lemonade, which was released April 23rd of 2016. The visual album takes us on a journey of the Southern Black woman finding forgiveness, finding love, finding herself, and everything else we do beautifully and elegantly. And to help us talk about that is going to be Alexis McGee.
She's a doctoral student at the University of Texas at San Antonio's Department of English. She studies Black feminist theory and Black women's language and rhetoric. So everybody, please give a big round of applause to Alexis. Hey.
All right, cut it, DJ. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Alexis. How are you?
Thank you for having me. This is amazing.
Thanks so much.
Thank you for coming.
All right, so, I guess let's just jump right into it. So what are a few characteristics of the way that Black women speak African-American, well, Black people speak African-American language, and what are some characteristics of Southern dialect?
Right, so for African-American language, some of the characteristics that we're mostly familiar with is G-dropping, so saying something like...
Swangin', bangin',
right? All those things without the ing, or specifically the g, right? We have r-lessness. So when Beyonce and Hold Up says for ya, there's no for your, right? The r is gone, and that's around in many different regional variations. But it's particularly something that is important when we talk about Southern Black women and Southern African American language, because it's not something that's connected specifically to Black folk, but also for working class communities. Even working class white communities have these sorts of features. It's just expressed more frequently with African American language. And when we're talking about African American women's language, African American women's rhetoric, we also have to note that the features, the G dropping, the R-lessness, and the some things like using D instead of the TH sound, so dis, det, dem, things like that, we use them, but we also use indirectness. You have to read between the lines with us. You have to know context. You have to know all these things. So we're direct, we're indirect, and we use all these features of African-American language on top of it.
Definitely. And so what are some negative perceptions of African-American language?
Yeah, about that. So I always get really passionate about this topic, too, because as a writing teacher, I have to tell my students it exists in the first place, which is not a conversation that we should still be having, right? But even in an article as recently as 2011, where Nancy Wilson, shout out to Texas State, she's there, and she was in the Writing Center, but she has moved to a different position. But she had an article where she was testing the Writing Center tutors, and she asked, what are their perceptions of African-American language? And even in 2011, we have Writing Center tutors at the university level saying that African-American language is baby talk, it's ignorant, it's not educated, right? And this is just not true. It's a language just like every other language. It's evolving. It has structure, it has context, it has meaning, and the perception that comes with African-American language is a historical phenomenon that we have to really take in consideration, right? So we've been struggling so long for our humanity that they are also not recognizing our language, and this is systematic, right? So it's seen in the universities, which then gets carried into our jobs and all of these daily structures of our lives, right?
So what's the significance of someone like Beyonce, who you may consider a Southern belle, right, using vulgar language all throughout the album? You know, what does this say about what contemporary Black South kind of sounds like today as well?
Yeah, so when Beyonce uses all these expletives, right, she's saying, hey, this is me, this is who I am, this is what's going on. I'm not going to adhere to your respectability politics that have been placed on Southern Black women for so long, and in a historical way, right, for women, we have to have these four pillars of truth, what Barbara Walter calls, you have to be submissive, you have to be domestic, you have to be pure, you have to be pious, right, all these things that go into making what should a woman be, which is not true, right? We are very complex beings. We speak very complexly, right? African-American women's language. And so when she's saying all these cuss words, she's going to give you the Southern belle and then some, right? And she's going to put it in your face. And
because
it
be like
it.
That sometimes.
Exactly. It's just the guy, I'm B. Hey, if you don't like it, then it's not for you, right? As her sister will back her up, right?
No, Solange will definitely fight.
She'll fight you, stop.
And she'll win. She will win. Mm-hmm. And so do you think that this changes the way that we view Black Southern language?
Especially, yeah, it's kind of jumping off of her question, especially in a way where it's been demonized, especially for being Black and for being Southern, right? Do you think that, you know, people are now going to start taking us a little bit more seriously?
I think it definitely helps. It definitely puts us in the right direction. To take this back, it has been going on, right? So Beyoncé is part of a legacy. We have blues women doing these traditions. We have blues women putting these linguistic features in the forefront. Just not everyone has always been accepted and privileged. So with Beyoncé's production of Lemonade, we can have this as a tool for teaching. We can also teach with this and teach about it. So it gives us more flexibility in the classroom and just more flexibility in public spheres to really assert our agency. And I'm saying ours and Black women, right? We're going to assert our agency in many spaces. And if you don't like it when we say it, we can also say, if you don't like it, then you also don't like Beyoncé. And we'll go back to the beginning.
And we know who you, right? We know what type of person you are if you don't like Beyoncé.
No, we definitely know. I have a question for you guys. Can you recall a time or think about the first time that you were made fun of for using specifically African American language?
Yeah, what about you?
Oh, yeah. And this was in elementary school. So I had just moved to Texas. I'm not native born. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I know. But I mean, sometimes when I say that, I was born in Kentucky. So I'm like, I don't know which one is better at sometimes to claim. But my dad's from New Orleans and my mom's from Pennsylvania, but like central backwoods, yeah. Pennsylvania. And so when I came to Texas, I also had a speech impediment. I was born with something wrong with my hearing. And so not only did I have a speech impediment and I couldn't speak properly, right, I also spoke with very regional dialects from both sides of my family. So when I came to Texas, like, you are an Oreo and you don't speak Black, but you do. I don't know where you fit in. So that's like all of my elementary years. And yeah. We moved a lot too. So my dad was in the Army. So my earliest expression or my earliest memory of that is probably second or third grade when they just tell you, you don't speak how you should speak, or you speak like you sound, and that's not good either. So therefore, you just don't exist on multiple levels. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What about you?
Yeah, for me, I don't remember what age it was when I remember myself being, picked on for the way that I speak. But I do remember a lot of the time when I went. So I'm from like Lufkin, East Texas area, an hour away from Louisiana. So whenever I would go to like family reunions and stuff like that, a lot of my family would pick on me and call me the white girl because I spoke a lot different than they did. But then when I went to college to Texas State, and then even when I went to like New York this past summer, people are like, oh my God, your twang is just like so strong. And, you know, where are you from? And it's always been a back and forth for me. It's like, I never speak right. Like I don't speak enough Black vernacular or, you know, with Southern dialect for my family. But on the other side of that, I kind of sound like slow and Southern to everybody. So that's kind of my experience with the way that I speak.
I really can't remember when I actually got like made fun of or if I ever have, but I remember that moment in my brain where I had to consciously start talking better in order to move through society. So I remember, like, of course, when you start looking for jobs, you can't just go in there and be like, I think I should get this job because I'm the best, I'm bomb. Like, you can't say that. And I remember having to consciously change up the way that I speak in order to, I felt like I had to do it in order to progress higher. And I'm country. Like, I'm country. Like, and if you hear me just talk, if you hear me talk to Dalia, if you hear me talk, like, all the African-American language comes out. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, that's what kind of makes me mad about Wendy Williams, right? Because she picks on Beyonce for the way that she speaks a lot of the time.
She does,
yeah. And yeah, girl, yeah.
I don't watch her show. So I don't watch her show. I don't know what she has going on over there, to be honest.
But the way that she comes at Beyonce, like, she makes fun of Beyonce for, first of all, sorry to offend any Northerners up here, but the Jersey accent is not the best accent. I'm just letting y'all know. right now. But she always picks on her for her slow draw. She always says that Beyonce sounds stupid, which is offensive to us because, you know, you're kind of thinking, you know, what are other people thinking about us, especially from like from areas that are not the South. Mm-hmm. And I think that it makes me self-conscious whenever I'm in a room full of like scholars or if I'm in a room or even if I'm talking on air, I have to be very conscious of my twang. Mm-hmm. And then just some of the slang that I use as well. So.
Do y'all watch Insecure?
Yeah.
How did you feel about when Molly approached Dada and told her that she kind of had to code switch in order to fit in? Mm. Because yeah. I think that's a very much, even though they're in Cali and it's not necessarily Southern, Dada had that African-American mm-hmm. language. She was herself. She spoke freely. How do you feel? How did that make you feel to hear Molly tell her that in order to move up in the company, she had to speak?
It makes you feel like you're not enough.
Yeah.
I think that, I don't know if you feel differently or anything like that, but.
I actually haven't watched this show because I'm doing this dissertation thing.
I'll let you know.
That's my one get out of jail free card. Yeah. But I can speak to that in terms of it's very difficult. And even as a teacher at Texas State, when I was doing this research initially, I was teaching a course on this, on African American language and grammar, to teachers who were teaching in the writing classes. So these were other graduate students. And I did my presentation. I said, here are the features of African American language. Here are some things you need to watch out for in grammar and syntax and so on and so forth. And then one, I'm just going to put it out there, right? One white male student, I won't say his name.
It'd be like that.
I really could. That's why I came up to Ian. Sorry, because I'm not. but he asked me, do you expect to let our students slide with this? I go, what, they are not sliding with anything. This mm-hmm. is their language. Mm-hmm. I expect you to know about languages when you teach writing. Mm-hmm. And I also expect you to respect your students and how they talk and how they present themselves and their identities. Like, how can you just dismiss a person's language and a person's identity because they're not the standard normative structure of identity or writing and language and so on and so forth. So
and that goes for the same thing for people who speak different languages as well, right? And that may have accents as well. But before we get to our last questions, we're going to ask y'all to start thinking about some questions to ask Alexis here. You can start lining up behind that microphone stand right there whenever you get ready. I guess, you know, you want to ask one of these last questions?
Yes. Yeah. So what was the most powerful part of Lemonade to you?
For me, it's really seeing the language. After hearing Formation, I saw the drop, and right, we all thought, got the preview at the Super Bowl. It's like, oh.
She's Beyonce really, is black.
She's really black, and she's here, and she loves it. So I was like, okay, let's listen to it. But then she has so many nuanced layers when you actually see all the African cosmology. Shout out to Dr. Brooks, who is a genius on this.
Amazing.
Right? So she layers all these performances and all these aesthetics to incorporate or to go along with African American language and African American women's language, right? So she not only does these G droppings, this dis, that, them, these artlessness, but she laughs and that means a certain thing. She's silent in certain places, which means a certain thing, right? All that's black women's language. And so when you put all these things together, it's a whole package, and I think it's really powerful, and it's a really good teaching tool as well. Some students, I actually just taught this yesterday and on last Friday, and my students, they still haven't seen it. And I'm just like, what? If I could give you a grade on if you've seen this or not, you would fail. Do you understand the implications of this album? So it's fun to still have that sort of impact in the classroom and to let other students know and to bring them, not just black women, but other women of color into the conversation to have real discussions about these things.
Yeah. Well, one question we always end on. The most important question in the whole show.
The very most important question. D'Elia has to make sure she asks everyone that she interviews this question.
Exactly.
Because it's important.
Exactly. How do you feel about Beyonce?
Girl, I'm Queen Bey for all of my life. I remember I was maybe 8 years old and I was in gymnastics. And I wanted to be a part of the U.S. gymnastics team so bad, but all my floor routines were to Destiny's Child, so I don't know if I could have made it.
What song? What song specifically?
Oh, the whole album. I made songs for the. I made dances for the whole album. I had like a crushed blue velvet jumpsuit.
Yes.
And I also had it in maroon. You name the color.
Yes.
A different sequins.
Yeah.
All of it. I made it by hand.
Yeah.
It was good to get done.
Can we get a rendition of that? Or
well,
anything?
You know, see, sometimes what happened was...
She charges for that.
Yeah, basically. Okay.
All right. I did a little slide in the front. I'd have to stretch maybe a good 10 minutes, and then we could go.
Well, now we can start opening the floor up for questions. You know, is there anybody who wants to ask a question or anything like that?
So what are y'all's favorite songs from Lemonade?
You did this on purpose.
We all took like a deep breath. Like,
Y'all, this is my best friend. I've known her since I was 4. And she knows how I feel about asking me to pick favorite songs from Beyonce. Because it's like asking me to choose between my left leg and my right arm.
Right.
Like, I just can't. I can't do it.
All right.
Personally.
Okay.
But I'm going to think on it. Y'all go first.
Oh, all right. You want to go first? You're the guest.
Whenever when I get asked this question, I'm like, I'm going to cop out, right, and have, like, a top 5 list, maybe.
All right.
But for this question in particular, it's more for me when I listen to Lemonade, like, how I'm feeling each day or in that moment. So today it was I Ain't Sorry is my favorite, but yesterday it was Sandcastles, right? So I'll go through all the feels with Beyonce. She's with me all the time, but today it's going to be Sorry.
Yeah. I think for me, my favorite was Daddy's Lessons because it was the first time I had ever heard Beyonce sing a country song. Y'all know I was choked up about that, especially because there is basically, black women are invisible in country music, even though country music was basically kind of invented by black people. It's been, of course, popularized by a certain other population. But
Elvis.
But yeah, I would have to say Daddy's Lessons because where I'm from as well, Zydeco and blues are a really big deal. And so like I heard all of the elements of trail riding. I don't know if you even know what trail riding is. It's when you dance, eat barbecue, all that. And I heard all of those elements in there and I felt seen and I felt heard whenever I heard that in there. And then I was just like, finally, you know, like maybe mainstream culture will embrace this rural type of music and dance as well. So,
you know, when you want to change your answer.
Yeah.
I know. Like
Mine is not as deep as D'Elia's. My favorite song, I'm going to have to say Hold Up because of the way that I felt when I first heard it. And just to see how she's transformed that song, how she transformed, like when she went on concert to Formation and she did Hold Up into Countdown, and it was a whole moment. And I
the transition
like
itself.
She tried to kill me because that transition was amazing. But just Hold Up, just listening to her talk about how just drag Jay-Z. Like if you weren't, first of all, the people around you, they only like you because you're you, and I make you a lot of who you are today. And so you're welcome. Like you're welcome. And I could leave today and I'm gonna be good. And just listening to her like stand up and cuss and be like, this is who I am. I could still be a Southern Belle. I'm Beyonce. I don't have to be perfect for y'all. These are the things that are going on in my life. That to me was just perfect.
Wow. All right. Do we have a question?
Yeah, I got a question for y'all. I wasn't here for the whole thing, so you guys might have discussed this, but and I've never listened to Lemonade, so.
Man.
Yeah, I know. I'm a huge Jay-Z fan, though, and I know a little bit. I know a little bit of the story behind Lemonade and how it was a result of his sort of actions and him kind of cheating on Beyonce. And I'm just kind of wondering what your feelings are in regards to Jay-Z. And, you know, I've even heard some podcasters say, yeah, we're thankful that he did this because as a result of this, we got Lemonade.
I have one answer for that. Beyonce should have married a countryman.
No. She really wants him. That's really the crazy thing about it. Like, she only wants Jay-Z. Like, girl, because she could get anybody she wanted.
She should have married a Southern man. This is the problem.
I mean, part of me wants to really just be like, that's really not my business, like, what goes on in their house, because it's really not. But it's also, I wouldn't say I'm thankful, because the thought of Beyonce going through pain is just caused me physical pain.
Yeah.
But I don't have any feelings about it. What I saw in Lemonade was the way that it wasn't just like Jay-Z said he was sorry and that was it. He actually had to like submit himself to him and show her that I am deeply sorry for the things that I've done. And it wasn't just like, he just didn't say sorry and he was done with it and he's going to do it again. Like, I deeply see that she forgives him, and in order for that to happen, she had to leave and then come back, and for him to realize, like, you know,
I think what Beyonce's
What
I really respected the most about that part is that Beyonce was able to stand on her own without Jay-Z. Yeah. And I think that she made that, like,
and that terrifies him.
Yeah, exactly.
That terrifies him.
Exactly.
And so just seeing that's beautiful, that there can be forgiveness in that. And if she forgives him, then
I don't have to, but
yeah,
whatever.
I mean, I'm still going on the run. I'm not going to boo him or anything.
I mean, but we're not there for him anyway. Oh,
no, not
matter.
At all. Not at all. Last On The Run, I was like, oh, I actually really know, like, a couple of Jay-Z songs. Because I was there for Beyonce. But most of the time, he was on stage, Beyonce was there too. So
that's fine. Yeah. What about you?
Yeah, I also just didn't want to take away from Beyonce gave us Lemonade. Period. But it doesn't have to stand on a man's positionality. Mm-hmm. I don't want it to. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to accept that, right? Mm-hmm. She can give us Lemonade. She can give us whatever she wants to. And men can do what they don't do, right?
What else?
But it's all about Beyonce and Lemonade at the end of the day. I'm not trying to highlight men's agency, because that's the normative, and I don't want to do it, right? So go ahead. I love Jay-Z, right? My family's from the north. I get cool, right? I can go both ways, but I'm team Queen B.
Of course.
Period. Yeah.
We have another question.
Yeah. Good afternoon, y'all.
Hey.
I remember around the time that Lemonade released, there was that feature with Michael Brown and Trayvon Martin's mothers. Mm-hmm. And it kind of brings into the question, of course, that African-American artists have a disproportionate burden in using their music to initiate social change. What exactly do you think, or what are y'all's opinions, I guess, generally speaking, about whether or not you think there's that unspoken obligation among certain artists to use their base and their influence to spark that change?
I think I wouldn't say that they should feel like they have to be obligated to that, but I feel like Beyonce felt it was her responsibility, if that makes sense. Like, especially the Black South, right, where we're seeing a lot of these situations happen. I don't know. I don't know how to answer that. Do you know how to answer
that's
that?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
I would say we still, again, have to look at the historical legacy that Beyonce is within. We had Billie Holiday do this with Strange Fruit, right? Mm-hmm. And then we can look at Bessie Smith and Alberta Hunter and how they talk about sexual liberation and gender fluidity. All of those things are still movements and moments in social justice for Black women specifically, but it's, you know, in a larger conversation that sometimes gets wiped out or not talked about. So we just have to remember that the way that we call for action happens across time and across space, and it's always in connection with each other, and it's always taking on various sorts of shapes in itself. So even if Beyonce didn't put out this album, we are talking about it, or just the conversations that we have. It doesn't necessarily have to be a song, and just as long as we are doing something or we are intentional about our actions is really what to me is more important than if we have an obligation to or not, because we are still fighting for humanity and we are still trying to validate our agency in multiple ways.
Yeah, that's a hard question to answer.
It's really tricky. Yeah. And the burden of a lot of like social justice has often fallen on the shoulders of Black women. And so it's really hard for me to say that someone is obligated to do something. Mm-hmm. But we also have to recognize, like, Beyonce putting them in her video wasn't the first time Beyonce's ever made a statement about social justice. I think maybe that was the first time some people have seen it. But I'm a firm believer in just because you're talking about something doesn't mean that you care. And just because you're not doesn't mean that you don't. And so Beyonce has done things in the past. And so I don't think for her it's an obligation. I think it's a part of her being, because she talked a lot about the struggles that her father has been through and her mother has been through. And so it's not really an obligation. It's just a part of who she is, if that makes sense. Yeah.
And that goes back to a lot of African-American women's language too, right? In African-American women's rhetoric, these are rhetorical traditions. We sit around kitchen tables and talk, right? So that's another manifestation of some of the ways in which Black women just take up what is already going on.
Yeah, thank you. We got a lot of people now. Hey,
Hi, so my question is really two questions. So one, where do you rank Lemonade, like, in terms of Beyonce's projects? And two, in terms of, like, the impact that Lemonade had, do you feel that the impact is more because it was a visual album, or do you think that it was, do you think that it could still be as impactful if it was just, like, a regular album with two music videos?
Dang.
Well, Beyonce has been doing, like, because she did an anthology for B-Day, so this isn't the first time she's done, like, a video thing. Like, videos are her thing.
And
so
she did a visual album before this with Beyonce.
With self-titled. Yeah. So, but as far as ranking, B-Day is my number one as far as albums. Yes, because B-Day was up. Yes, B-Day is up there.
Dang, yeah. I don't honestly. I was gonna say I can't answer that question.
Pass.
I feel like Lemonade is at least my top three.
It's just and it.
I'll
it's,
go with that.
Yeah.
It's but it's also like you can't rank them because you have like different eras of Beyonce.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The Beyonce that we had in the beginning is not the Beyonce that I see. You know, at the end.
Evolution, like
and
to and fro.
It's an evolution.
There you go.
Yeah. But it's also just you have different Beyonces, and I think. For me, the last two albums are kind of their standalone, like a separate thing, because that's really just her really coming into her artistry. We saw a little peek of it with Four, but these last two albums are just completely separate to me than the other ones.
All right. Okay, Beyonce scholar. See you.
I'm serious about this.
I also have to add in her book. Like, she has a coffee table book of Lemonade that gives you all the visuals, all the pictures, all of, like, some of the historical references and why she did what she did. So I don't think I can separate the book from the album, but I also agree, like, I can't pick one at all.
All right. Well, we have time for one more question. All right, thank you.
So within, like, the Black culture, there's, like, the whole light skin versus dark skin thing. And Beyonce's dad even said that, like, Beyonce wouldn't be as popular if she was of darker skin. What is your view on Beyonce being light skin and then, like, her obviously being, like, the great Beyonce? Like, what's your view on that?
I kind of... That's hard because Beyonce on her own is very talented. She's a different type of creator. But at the same time, I do think that Beyonce's Eurocentric features have kind of skyrocketed her into the position that she's in today. I think those particular features have opened the door for her, but Beyonce on her own has done the work. So
definitely. And she's very aware of these things as well, right? I know that she has, shout out to Taina Steptoe, who writes about this in her book. Well, I don't know if it was in her book, Houston Bound, but she has definitely discussed this at a different symposium where she brought up that Beyonce actually has a song called Creole, but it was only released to her international audiences. So she's very aware. And even in Formations, she talks about these features and what she and herself privileges. So she's aware of those dynamics. But I agree, even if she's aware of it, she has done the work to back up to even have this discussion. So if you have this discussion of colorism, you can't say that she's not good enough, even if she were a different skin tone, because she's the best.
Yeah. And I personally typically try not to get involved with colorism is real. Yeah. It is a very real thing. Yes. And so whenever people bring up they brought it up with, like, Bruno Mars just a couple of weeks ago, I often try and shift the conversation to talk about why are we here where we are today? And let's focus on the issue of colorism, because people are still acting like in 2018 it's not a real thing.
Yeah, right.
And so for me, I think talking about Beyonce and Bruno Mars and other people like that being in the position that they are, it does have some value, it does have some truth, and it is a part of the conversation. But there's an even bigger and broader conversation that still needs to be had about colorism and the fact that people negate it like it's something that isn't real.
Same thing with body type as well. Beyonce has these, you know, these measurements, her hips, you know, her breasts, her waist and all that. And I
what
feel like,
waist?
Wait, right?
What waist?
Anyway, sorry. But yeah, I feel like, you know, her body type has kind of skyrocketed her as well. If Beyonce was a plus size woman, nobody would admire Beyonce as much as they do right now. So
I would.
Okay.
Yeah,
all right. Me too, but I mean, we got sense. All right. Well, thank you so much, Alexis, for doing this.
Thank you, Alexis.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
I don't know where your seat is.
Right?
Yeah, you can stay. So Alexis is going to stay up here and look pretty.
There's no more seats.
That's fine. Yeah, there's no more seats. All right. So let's see where we are. All right. So now we are at the part... I think Jackie's favorite part of the show, where we're going to test somebody in the audience on their Beyonce fandom. You know, we're going to host our first ever to and fro lip sync for your life battle. Some lucky challenger, we get to lip sync Jackie. Good luck. You know, and then at the end, the audience is going to vote on the winner. And then the participant gets a prize, you know.
So who wants to participate?
Who wants to volunteer to...
You get to pick your own song.
Somebody.
Somebody
in the front. Don't be afraid of embarrassing. This is a safe space, I'm saying. Like,
Lauren raised her hand.
Yeah. This is a blessed place.
Lauren raised her hand.
Anybody?
Lauren.
I guess we have a challenger in the back. hi. Hi. So you can come up here.
What's your song?
No, it doesn't. So do you want to go first, or Jackie, do you want to go first?
Jackie can go ahead and go first.
All right. And then you can just, you know, thinking about what you want. Are you the fake mic is right here.
Because I actually cannot.
All right. So I'm going to try to, like, announce like a sports announcer. If it gets annoying, just let me know. I mean, are you ready? All right, so, okay, you do what you do. All right. All right, so our first ever lip sync live performance by Jackie. Hit it, DJ. All right, DJ. All right. All right now.
Yeah! Paris Frank.
All right, you're coming in with the Beyonce walk.
How y'all feeling tonight?
All right. All right, can we get some time. Cheers from the audience?
You ready?
Hit it. Oh, what? Oh.
Touch you more and more every time. Would you leave? I'm begging you not to go.
All right, all right.
Three times in a row. Such a funny thing for me to try to explain.
Taking me all the way back. Taking me all the way back.
I still don't understand. It's like you left me doing no one else can.
You're supposed to be lip syncing. Why are you just dancing?
Sing your love.
All right. Are we getting Beyonce vibes here? All right. You gonna hit it? Go. What? Get it. What? Hey. Go, Jackie. Go. 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 All right. All right. Can we get a round of applause for Jackie?
Have we decided what song yet?
Okay. All right, so, and who do we have with us?
Are you doing live?
Oh, my name is Lauren.
Okay, so Lauren, what song are you gonna lip sync battle Jackie to?
I'm gonna do Drunk in Love.
All right, and you know, you take center stage and we'll let you know when we're ready. All right, all right. Are you gonna sing this time?
Oh.
You're not, you're gonna sing, because.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
she
did it, but I will.
Got you. All right.
You tried it.
All right, are we ready?
Thank you.
I've been drinking.
All right.
I've been drinking.
On that moonshine, I see you.
I get filthy when that liquor get it to me. I've been thinking. Why can't I keep my fingers off it, baby? I want you.
All right, all right. All right, with the table as a prop, I see you. All right, okay. All right, it's not stable. It's cool.
Cigars on ice, cigars on ice. Feeling like an animal with these cameras all in my grill. Flashing lights, flashing lights.
Y'all can sing along, audience. Come on.
You got me pity, 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 baby. I want you.
Lauren, I see you. Tell them.
Keep your eyes off my petty daddy. I want you. Nana. Drunk in love.
All right, gonna break it down for us. Go ahead.
I want you. We woke up in the kitchen saying, how the hell did this shit happen? Oh, baby.
Yeah.
Drunk in love.
What y'all be?
We be all night. All
right. All right, give a round of applause for Lauren. Thank you so much. Good job. All right, so Jackie and Lauren, y'all come stand right here. All right, so the audience is going to cheer according to who did the best. Okay, yeah, this is like American Idol. They're holding hands. They're acting sappy. Oh. All right, for Lauren, round of applause. For Jackie. All right, well, Lauren won. And to present her with the reward, she gets a nice exclusive freshly made to and fro shirt.
I would like to thank Beyonce for making this possible. All right. Oh, and God.
All right, all right. All right, well, thank you. Another round of applause.
But we also have a shirt for our speaker today, Miss Alexis. You're welcome.
All right. So, awkward transition. We got to have some music right here or something, y'all. Sorry about that. Boom, boom. All right. So, we've come to the end of our show. We have about 10 minutes left. And if you're familiar with the show, each episode, we do a to and fro moment. Jackie, do you kind of want to talk about what that
yes,
is?
Yes, so to and fro, the reason why, shout out to Megan for coming out with the name for our show, Megan Richards, but Megan. To and fro is about the constant movement that we experience within our lives every day. And so we're young adults and we're navigating through this world. And so to and fro is kind of like, it could be a reflection, how you felt this week, just something that happened to you. And like to is where you were and fro is like you're here in your transformed state. Yes. And so it's about the constant evolution and movement that we experience as young adults.
Like a caterpillar.
Metamorphosis.
Okay.
All right. And to begin, we always start by asking, well, first, Alexis, we want to ask you, you know, what's your to and fro moment? What's your reflection of the week, your lesson of the week, or just like how you feeling?
All right, I got this one.
And I'm sorry to interrupt, but while you're getting ready, anybody who wants to share their to and fro moment, could you please line up behind this mic stand? Yeah.
So my to and fro moment is the fact that this week I got accepted into an actual job, so I will be adulting. Thank you, thank you. I will be adulting soon.
Yes!
And
you
so,
can cry with the rest of us.
Yeah.
It's not fun.
So I will be accepting a position, or I have accepted a position at the University of Alabama.
Yes! Pride,
and I'll be teaching English there in the fall.
Oh, congrats!
I wasn't, and now I will.
To and fro. Uh-huh. Y'all saw that? All right. Anybody from the audience want to share their to and fro moment, a reflection of the week, a lesson, or something that you just want to share with the audience? Don't be afraid. I know we saw this line earlier, and we know that y'all have potential. So, anybody?
This isn't from the past week, but the fact that this is the 2-year anniversary
of Lemonade is a really big deal because that weekend I almost had a nervous breakdown. Wow. Like, legit from the feelings that I got from listening to that album. And it just, wow, like, related a lot to what I was dealing with in life at the moment. And now, you know, it's 2 years later.
Okay.
And that's my and cue, and that's my fro. And
there
I
you
feel
go.
So much better
there you
now,
go.
Y'all.
Thank you for sharing.
Yes.
Anybody else in the audience? You don't even have to get up and walk behind the stand. I'll hand you the microphone. Don't be afraid. Oh, yeah, here
pass
we go.
Pass the mic.
And can you state
your name first? Oh, no. I'm Dr. Carol Adams-Means, and congratulations on your completion of your studies and
thank
getting
you
a good old job. And don't let them fool you with that tenure game.
I've got okay it in writing.
So back to the Lemonade thing. I think it went something like my daddy Alabama, my mama Louisiana. Mm-hmm. So for a long time, I thought we were from Louisiana, and I didn't want to be from Louisiana. And after doing some family history search, I found out that we're really kind of from Mississippi. So the point is, the to and fro is that I went from, you know, not thinking too much about being from Louisiana, and I find out I'm from Mississippi. So at anyway, at the end of the day, it's all good, and I found out my family history. But when I think about Lemonade, it gives me all of that mixture and gumbo, mm-hmm, of all of what went on in that region of the country to make us who we are today.
Yes.
Anybody else in the audience? Anybody want to share anything? Something? Anybody? You want to? Yeah, okay. Hi, girl, I don't know. Yeah, let's share something.
Hi, everyone. I'm Alejandra. I know Dalia. She's amazing. So I guess my to and fro moment is today I'm here in Austin, and next week I'll be in Houston, and the following week I'm going to be in Miami.
Okay.
I got a job as an associate producer for their NPR station over there.
Wow!
So.
Congratulations!
And I'm going to be staying at her house without her permission. Okay. All right. Anybody else want to share one last one, and then we'll stop bugging you? Oh, perfect. Let me go over here. Sorry, guys.
Hey, y'all. Okay, so mine isn't from, like, this week at all either, but it's, like, from the beginning of the semester. So I was in undergraduate studies, but now I'm in journalism, and I really like it. This is fun, like, being around y'all. Everything. Aww. I really like it. So, yeah, I guess that's my to and fro moment.
Yeah. All right, great. And so I guess this is the time where me and Jackie,
We share our
own to and fro moment.
Do you want to go first? You want me to go first?
You can go first.
Okay. So my to and fro moment this week would have to be from, like, something I saw on Twitter. I don't know if you guys saw the video of the student from UNT, and he made a video, and he said that if a woman have sex with me on the first night, then she can't be cuffed. I can't never wife her. And so my to and fro moment was seeing how much we've evolved, because instead of seeing men join in or other women be like, yeah, I don't sleep with dudes on the first night. Yeah, I'm not like them other girls. Or men being like, yeah, she trash or whatever. I saw an influx and an overload of people being like, first of all, if you sleep with her on the first night, what does that say about you? Mm-hmm. And also, women are free to do whatever they want to do. They're free to do whatever they want to do with their bodies.
Amen.
So if she wants to have sex with you on the first night as a conscious and consentful decision, that's what she wants to do. And if she doesn't, that's fine too. And it was just nice seeing all these women come together, all these men come together too, and just be like, first of all, you don't know what you're talking about and you're stupid. And so that's just my to and fro moment, just seeing how far we've come. Because if this would have been like 2 years ago, it would have been a completely different conversation. But I'm glad that we're having good conversations about consent, good conversations about, you know, not body respectability politics. You can do what you want to do. So, yeah, that was my moment.
That was a good one. I like it. I would say, I honestly didn't even think of mine until I was sitting up here listening to you. But I would say that my to and fro moment, which I think I've done this before, it's just like saying thank you to my support system, to everybody who deals with my crazy emotions and my crazy schedule. Like, no matter how many times I mess up, I'm always seen, you know, the same in the eyes of the people who love me. And even when I doubt myself, you know, there are people who always hold you up. So that's my two and fro moment.
Yeah. That was so cute.
So I think we're at the end.
I know, we're at the end of the show.
Oh my God, you guys, thank you for participating in our first live show.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, first of all, thank you to all of you guys for being here. Thank you for participating with us, and you know, thank you for being you.
Yeah.
And so make sure to tell all your friends about To and Fro if you enjoyed today. Like us and follow us on Twitter at The To and Fro. And yes.
And our theme song music is by Miss Honey Banks. Follow her on Twitter at Miss Chris Honey B. You know, anything else?
Dilia, do you have anything to lead the peoples with today?
Yes. So this is the first time I'm ever doing this. All right. So, okay, y'all have to participate. At the end, when I say go, y'all got to say it. So we're going to say, y'all ain't about the South, but we're going to say it really loud. All right. You ready? One, two, three. Y'all ain't about the South.